From an early age, we're all immersed in sport. For some, it fails to ignite a spark inside us, but for those of us who catch the fire, it's the beginning of a lifelong journey filled with highs and lows, which all matter far more than they should. After all, it's just a game, we're told. Sport is a certainty, it's a point of reference in an increasingly uncertain world, and the bonds formed with either sport in general or a hometown club transcend both time and generations. Today, much of what sport has always meant to true fans has been somehow lost in a blizzard of corporate communications, fireworks, and froth. The attachments that were once so strong seem more trivial in the global age of televised sport as entertainment. What was once authentic has become increasingly staged. In this podcast, we'll get back to the things that sport has always meant to true fans. We'll take you from the boardroom to the dressing room to the pitch, but we'll do it not as a corporate communication, but as true fans of sport, and we'll do it with authenticity. We'll be honest, and we'll speak our minds. This is a podcast for true sports fans, and the one thing all fans have in common is a passion for the game. Now, we certainly don't mean to cause any offence, so if you find yourself taking any, just shrug it off and get back in the game, because this is about the game, and the game is bigger than all of us.
We've got some fresh new young talent doing some things that I know you haven't heard before.
Listen.
Well, welcome everybody to yet another edition of Are You Not Entertained? I'm in the sunny Cayman Islands, briefly, and Roger Mitchell is not in the lake or by the lake. Roger, where are you this week?
Man, you know, I just don't know. It's fucking 4 o'clock in the morning. It's a dark room, but being like, it's not a disco, it's not a country club. So it's LA, to quote Sheryl Crow.
Well, listen, the last time she was seen, she was stuck in her Tesla.
Well, that's actually why I looked her up, because she passed the car and she can't get out. And then, like, he, you know, tries to give her instructions on Twitter about, you know, putting the contrast down and the setting and, like, you know, what is going on? It's just like, La La Land, La La Land.
Well, literally, that's where you are, mate. Yeah, you are in La La Land.
Santa Monica, yeah.
As the old saying goes, it's a funny old world. Well, look, this week, no guests this week, so you and I have got a lot of chatting to do about various things.
We do.
I'm in a particularly upbeat mood this week, Roger. I've only got goals for you this week. I don't have any own goals.
Well, you had goals. You had goals last week as well, I think.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
This granddaughter thing is really changed you, my friend.
Maybe that's what it is.
You're now looking at life in a completely different way.
Maybe that's what it is.
Good for you.
I have a funny feeling I'm going to be back to my old self before too long. But I'm going to kick off this week. I'm going to kick off with my first goal. And that is the one event that you can guarantee every year is just provides drama and thrills. Yeah. We spoke about this briefly before, and that's the NCAA Final Four. Now, I happened to be in Virginia filming for Real Vision and sat watching the Virginia-Auburn semifinal game on Saturday night, which was extraordinary. I mean, it was an absolutely unbelievable game for you. I'm sure you didn't see it, and no. There were plenty of people who didn't, but Auburn, who were the underdogs, had a 4-point lead with 17 seconds left. The game was done. The Virginia Cavaliers guard, this guy Kyle Guy, makes a big 3-pointer to get him within a point.
Yeah.
Then there's the Auburn go down, score another bucket. So they're basically, they're down three, Virginia, with basically, you know, second and a half left. This guy makes a 3-point shot from the corner, or takes a 3-point shot from the corner, gets fouled, and it's a pretty loose foul. It's not, you know, you could have argued it wouldn't have been called at any other point in the game, but they called it. So the guy has to, essentially with 0.6 of a second left on the clock, has to make three foul shots to win the game. Two to tie it, three to win the game. And he makes all three of them. Cool as a cucumber.
Wow.
Makes the shots, wins the game. But that's not my goal. That's just standard Final Four stuff. My goal was the Auburn coach, Bruce Pearl, who just gave a clinic in how to handle
that kind of adversity. You know, there was a missed call on the last play of the game that should have given the ball back to Auburn and would have won them the game. The foul was, you know, it was a foul, but should it have been called at that point in the game? Probably not. So here's a guy on the verge of taking his team to their first ever national championship game, getting beat in the last second of the game with two controversial calls going against him. And, I mean, the amount of class in this guy saying that, you know, I'm not going to talk about this. Virginia played a great game. They deserve to win. You know, he just refused to point the finger at the refs. He refused to get drawn by the media into, you know, bitching and moaning about the, it was just extraordinary. And this was right in the moment. You know, he was just fantastic. And in the press conference afterwards, same thing. I mean, they forced him to discuss the calls. And he's, you know, the one thing he said was, look, and I'm going to quote this directly. He said, my advice as an administrator of the game is if that's a foul, call it. He said, you know, call it at the beginning of the game, call it in the middle of the game, call it at the end of the game. Don't call it any more or less at any other time during the game. That was the call. And he's absolutely right. But there was no bitterness. There was no, it was extraordinary because this was a very, very big deal. And, you know, he's come out of it just a class act. So that's my first goal of the week.
Do you have the clip of that, Grant? Can you send it to me? I'll put it on the feed.
It was about, if you just Google Bruce Pearl press conference, you'll find it. I mean,
right.
It's
okay.
Just remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. So my hat is tipped to Bruce Pearl and his remarkable sportsmanship under incredibly adverse conditions.
Wow. Well, this isn't neither my goal nor my own goal, but it brings me comebacks to talking about the Borussia Dortmund game. Bloody hell.
Yes, bloody which you hell. Said was going to be a barn burner. Yeah, okay, it was in one way, I guess.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of goals.
Bayern burnt Dortmund's barn to the ground.
Unbelievable. You know, this just shows you, you know, that what people say that it's in the head, it's winning is about being used to winning, being able to take the pressure. You know, this is a young team, Dortmund team that have done so well all year, and you can just see that they weren't there. They didn't turn up. They just didn't turn up.
Yeah, it was a battering, I have to say. Although the one thing I will say, forget the big game, forget Dortmund against Bayern. Did you see the goal from the Leipzig player?
No.
Oh, listen, this guy, Matthias Kuhner, his name was M-A-T-H-E-U-S, C-U-N-H-A.
Very impressive.
Just take a look at that goal and tell me it isn't one of the best goals you've ever seen scored. It was remarkable. Honestly, you'll be spellbound by it, Roger, I guarantee it. The poise, the skill, and the presence of mind to do what he does. You just take a look at it, and you'll thank me afterwards. I promise you.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm trying to do that while I go into my goal. I'll try and look that up. Here it is. The Matthias Kuhner goal. Right. Let's have a look.
Just take a look. Take a look at it now. You can do this live and tell me what you think. Let's hope there isn't 3 minutes of adverts. James can cut those out.
It's one of these sites. And I'm not sure if it's actually the video or not.
I've seen a headline here. I'm looking for it myself. It says, that's it. Leipzig have scored the best goal ever. We can stop football now.
Oh, my God. I need to find this then. Yeah, right. Here's YouTube. It should be on that.
You'll see the skill. To me, it's not the initial bit of skill. It's the presence of mind afterwards that just blows me away.
Oh, yeah, I did see that, mate. I did see that, the chip at the end. I did see that.
How can you, when I'm talking about it, how can you not realise that's what I was talking about if you've seen it? It was spectacular.
It was very good. I wouldn't put it as the best goal of all time, but yeah, I did see that and I thought that's very cool. I did.
That was genius.
Yeah, great. So that takes me on to my goal, which I'm going to mention something called Nita's Story, which comes from an organisation.
Oh, I saw you tweet this, but I didn't get a chance to watch it yet.
Oh, man, you need to watch it. It comes from an organisation called Laureus, which a lot of sports guys don't know about. It's something I think that was set up with Nelson Mandela. It's about using sport to change the world in a positive way. And one of my old mates, Jonty Hill, is the CEO there. So I follow all of his stuff. And this little video is 2 minutes. It's about an Indian girl. She must be about 13 or something like that. And she talks about... I mean, it's just an amazing story. It talks about in her village that all the girls her age, that age, are expected to marry. because they've got no future as an independent person that can make a living and everything like that. So they're pressured to marry, and just tragic, you know. And you know, then you see her saying, "Well, you know, my escape from all of this is football and playing in the girls' team." And you see the footage of them all playing together, and their smiles are as big as a watermelon. And it really is truly amazing, you know. And you know why do I want to say this? Because you know me, Grant. I like the odd politically incorrect joke. I like the odd sexist joke, right? But I mean, fuck me! How is this still going on in this day and age? The people are having to get a marriage arranged, and they can't follow their dream. And you know, these organisations, these AFCs, these FIFAs, all these big confederations, what they should really be doing with their power and their money is using it to change all of those cultural things that are, you know, millennia behind. You know, so that video really had a big impact on me. It's just beautifully done, cut, and you know. So, congratulations to Laureus and Jonty Hill.
Oh, fantastic! Well, I'm gonna dig this out and watch it, because I did see you tweet it, and I thought, oh yeah, I must try and watch that. But I've just been running around like a lunatic as usual. I don't have time to. So I'll stick that on with this. All right. Well, my second goal is the Augusta National Women's Championship, the amateur tournament that the women played at Augusta National this past weekend.
Right.
You know, there's something about that place that it just brings out the most extraordinary golf that you'll see all year. You know, this was obviously a much talked about event, and everyone was talking about obviously the cultural implications and you know the progressive nature of having the women play at Augusta for the first time, blah, 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 blah. But you know what? When it came down to it, it was just fantastic golf once again. You know, two young, I don't know if you saw any of it, but two tremendously talented young women golfers who were very close friends, distanced themselves from the field. And again, this back nine at Augusta, they came down to play the back nine at Augusta. One of them had a two-shot lead going into the back nine, and the other one ended up winning by four. But it was... You know, this
compelling
girl who won it was just amazing. You know, Jennifer Kupcho was five under par in six holes at one point. Back nine. You know, all these famous holes that you've seen, all the biggest players in the world amp up the drama, and she just blazed through it. But you know, the most extraordinary thing was, I just said, these were two great friends, and the sportsmanship. Yeah, you know, the applauding the other person's shot.
Sounds great.
Giving them a tap on the back when they hold a big putt, even though the other girl had, you know, lost a shot. It was fantastic. And the hug at the end on the 18th green was, you could see it was just genuine admiration and affection. It was everything that not just golf but sport should be. And you know, I'm sure the good folks at Augusta are going to be delighted with how it went down, how it played out, and you know, to put a tournament as important as this one on the map like that, with that quality of play and that quality of golf, is the best thing that could happen, because this event is going to get a lot of publicity for that, and it will ensure that you know, it comes back bigger and better next year. The girls, by no means, were out sort of shone by the men. It was fabulous to watch. I sat glued. I was trying to write, and I'm sitting there with this thing on the background, and I kept finding myself staring at it because it was just remarkable.
Well, you know, I'm telling you, we've said this before. Maybe women are going to take sport when it needs to get back to. You know, that's two examples in a row now on this podcast, and we don't plan this. So you know, I think that's a good sample that says that women's sport is here. They're maybe coming back with some of the real sporting values that have been lost a little bit. I never saw that, but I can imagine exactly how you've described it. That's just wonderful. And then you know, it's not as if they can't play all the shots. They can, and that's the same in golf and football. You know, it's here. It's now. We did a small little thing for women's 3-on-3 basketball in one of the startups I work on. And, you know, you can see these girls that it's their time. It's absolutely their time.
Yeah, no, look, I agree. And you know, it's with all the cynicism that you find in men's professional sport, which I mean, look, you can trace it back to the money, because when you look at some of these amateur competitions, the sportsmanship is still there. So, you know, I'm sure we're going to have this brief window where the female sport is pure and it's not driven by money and it's not driven by greed. You know, let's just enjoy that while we can, and because you know what's going to happen, Rog, right? You know what's going to happen.
Well, they've always been a little bit more intelligent than us, so who knows? Who knows, Grant?
Way more intelligent, but you know what's going to happen? The corporations are going to see opportunity and they start throwing money at it, and they're all, you know, that money is, as it always does, you just know it's going to corrupt the purity of it. Yeah. It always does. I mean, how can it not? It's no slight on the women. It's just, it's inevitable, unfortunately.
Well, I'm going to come on to my own goal now, which is a little bit of a montage of the same theme here. The first one is your own club and the Stop the Greed campaign about ticket prices. So I'll let you opine on that in a minute. But the context is there was a little spat on Twitter regarding the journalist Kirsty Gallagher, who was on a phone-in 606 with a Man City woman fan. And, you know, she was kind of like her body language and everything, because it was filmed. She was basically saying this person was taking the semi-final not the right way, and she was complacent. And this woman went on a very intelligent rant about ticket prices and how much it costs, you know, I think she came out of it very, very well, and Kirsty Gallagher's had a bad time on Twitter about this. And, you know, again, it comes back to the big eventers and what Richard Gillis was saying, and then you see the new Spurs stadium, and, you know, some fans are already worried about they're going to be priced out, and you know, it's that polarization again. Our sport isn't meant to be just for the big eventers, and, you know, I really sympathize with a lot of real hardcore fans that are spending a huge amount of money to get to games that, you know, let's be honest, a lot of these clubs are kind of like downplaying or putting down the priority list. You know, it's not a good place, Grant. Tell me about the Fulham thing. What do you feel about that?
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I was back in the UK. Literally, I've been filming in Europe, and we were flying through London, you know, staying at the airport and flying out the next day. So it was myself and my camera guy. And as we came in on the plane from Europe, I saw that Fulham were playing. I said to him, look, you know, we're staying at the airport. Do you want to go and watch Fulham tonight? He said, oh, yeah, that'd be good. You know, he's a Belgian guy. He loves his football.
Yeah.
So we dashed from City Airport across to our hotel at Heathrow and then back into town. Which we should have had plenty of time to do, but obviously by the time we got there, we'd missed the first half of the game and had to actually find it, which I think I spoke about this on the podcast before. We had to get thrown in. But the tickets, when I booked them online, they were like £65 for two seats at Fulham. Yeah. And I said to him at the time, I said, geez, the price of these tickets is through the roof. And I thought at the time that was crazy. And it's only really since this campaign has kind of gathered some traction that I've looked into it. I just figured that was a fairly standard Premier League thing these days, because obviously I don't get to go to many games anymore, Rog. And I was just amazed at how much Fulham had jacked the prices up and totally screwed their own supporters. Now, you know, I guess you could argue that if that came with good football, the supporters wouldn't be as upset, but to pay that kind of money and sit through what they've had to sit through this season, it's objectionable at the very least. But ultimately, this pricing thing will work itself out, because there is a level where people will stop paying it, right? I mean,
well, you see, this is the point, Grant. I have to interrupt you there. This is the point, because it comes back to fans being different types of people. You and I think, go around the world and we look at events and purchases and everything like that, and from a whole value for money outlook, and we say, well, this time I'll buy it, but this time I think it's just asking a little bit too much, and I'll step away. And that can be for anything. It could be anything at all. The thing with football is, some people, I'm not one of them, but some people go everywhere. You know, it is their life. It is their leisure time. And they, if you ask them and they looked into themselves, they would say they don't have much of a choice and they go home and away. So there's no price elasticity from these people. And you know, they're just being hosed through the nose. And I don't buy this, you know, little event. But it will work its way out because they'll just price it so much that whilst they may want to still go, they just can't afford it. And then it'll be more spaces for the corporates and the tourist fans. And, you know, it's not good. It's not good. And this woman came on the radio and I think she said it very, very well. And they treated her quite in a condescending way. And I think a lot of people don't get the average fan.
No, I don't disagree, Rog. I mean, but there is a place where it becomes unaffordable. And obviously, that because of the fandom, that people will stretch themselves to get there. But there's a line you'll cross, and once you cross it, you're not going to have to take a pace back. You're going to have to go a long way back, right? Because that's just the nature of these things. It's unless you start, you know, the league capping ticket prices. Which I can't see happening anytime soon. It's about finding, you know, supply and demand. They can keep jacking these prices up, but they will end up losing the real fans and ending up with the big eventers. And look, it's the way of the world, unfortunately. There's really not much you can do about it apart from regulate ticket prices, and we know that's not going to happen. You charge what you think you can get away with in these markets, and that's what they're doing. But the backlash at Fulham shows you that there is a point where the fans will dig in.
And hope so.
It'll be interesting to see what they do next year at Fulham. I mean, obviously, prices ought to come down significantly, but let's wait and see what they try and get away with.
Well, you know, while you mentioned that, let's stay on Fulham a little bit because...
do we have to?
Well, yeah, because I'm not having a dig. It's just, tell me from, you know, an intelligent fan's point of view, you come up, you're playing good football. You know, I remember we watched a playoff game together and then you spend this shitload of money in the summer and it goes completely tits up. I mean, like, what happened, Grant?
Well, I think it's pretty straightforward. They came up, they spent a load of money, they brought in a load of players on big salaries, and the players who got them up into the Premier League didn't see their wages go up in line. And so I think the whole season, the squad has been split in two with a lot of high-priced imports who, you know, walked into the team at the beginning, leaving the guys who'd done all the work in getting them promoted from the Championship on, you know, earning a fraction of their salaries, and that just sows discord. You know, it's never easy to bring in so many players and change a team completely anyway. So that was always going to be a big ask for them. But if half the team are jealous and angry and perceive that the others are being treated better and it's unfair, you know, you can't survive unless you have a real team. You know, a real
That's
team
the point.
That stick together and they clearly didn't have that at Fulham. You know, I watched a few games this season when I happened to be back. And I watched plenty on the TV, and you could see it, Rog. You could just see that this wasn't a team in the true sense of the word. And so, it's no real surprise to me to see once the heads went down at the start of the season after a few bad performances and a few losses. As soon as the pressure got amped up, they just split into two camps, and the end was written a long time before they got relegated, unfortunately. Next year is going to be interesting.
That's the point. You know, like they're going to go down with all those salaries and all those players and that busted dressing room. You know, like you and in a minute there give the perfect summary of, you know, the do's and don'ts. So how can somebody that allegedly is running a football club and is paid to run a football club, how can they make errors like this? You know, you can see it coming a mile away that there should be some kind of like process that says, you look, yeah, we like this player. You know, I think he could add to it. But honestly, the flip side of what it does to the dressing room, we're just going to leave it. Why aren't people doing this?
But look, the pressure, right? The pressure of building a big team, the expectations of we're promoted, we need to bring in a lot of big players. You know, and again, that some of that comes from the fans. The fans put unreasonable pressure on. But it's really not that difficult, Roger, to understand, as you said, right? It's pretty clear what happened here. It's pretty clear you could see the mistakes being made as they did it. But at the time, all the commentary, and the fans have to take their part in this, was, oh, my God, look who we've signed now. Fantastic. You know, we're really spending big. We're bringing in great players, blah, blah, blah. So the strategy they've employed worked, right? It got the fans all G'd up. It created the buzz. It got everyone all fired up for the new season. You know, perhaps what G Djukanovic should have done. And I still think he's the best manager we had this season, despite the results. I think he should have been given more time. But I think his mistake was trying to put too many of those new players into the team straight away, instead of putting maybe a couple of them in and then seeing how it went. But obviously, I'm sure these guys, when they signed their contracts, it was with the guarantee of playing. And, you know, none of these problems are new, Rog. None of them are a surprise to any of us. And they're not going to change. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to learn from the Fulham lesson. And if they do, it'll be next year. And then by the year after, they'll have forgotten them.
That's a bit depressing. But anyway, listen.
I told you I'd be back to my normal self before long.
Yeah, sorry I took you there, mate.
All you had to do was bring up Fulham.
Yeah. Well, here's another one that I want to ask you about. You're an English guy, right? And England, Britain certainly, but probably England, invented football. And for that reason, gets to call its federation the FA, not the English FA.
Oh, I know where you're going with this, yeah.
But now, you know, they're deciding they want to rebrand themselves as the English FA. Because I think the reason is, well, we're in a global game and, you know, we want to host events and we'll need votes, so we need to be seen to be not superior and elitist and be humble. I mean, honestly, you know, like, you invented the game. You should get to call yourself the FA, just like the British Open gets to call itself the Open. You know, is this not kind of like political correctness gone mad? I mean, you know what I mean? Tell me.
Yeah. No, of course it is. I mean, look, all political correctness is gone mad, in my opinion, right? I mean, it's just, this is, I read the story and honestly, Rog, I just rolled my eyes that, of course, right? I mean, it's not even something to get up in arms about anymore. You're right. It is the Football Association. The rules, as I understand it, are basically licensed to FIFA by the Football Association. You know, they're our rules. It's our game. We invented it. We invented the rules. And they do play the rule. FIFA do play football under the sanction of the Football Association. So to do that, it's bizarre. But again, it's the world we live in. I mean, I'd love to think there was some great conversation you and I could have about this and with lots of deep insights on both sides. But it's
nonsense.
It's a simple case of that's where we are.
It's nonsense.
But I tell you what, something you said back then has reminded me, I do have an own goal this week. I do have an own goal, and you're going to like this one, and I'm sure you're going to have something to say about it. And I read this during the week, Saturday, I think I read it, maybe on Sunday, I'm not sure. And this was Gordon Strachan. You've seen this. Now, you know, there's no point in going into what he said, but he basically conflated a football player, Premiership football player, who was convicted and sentenced to serve
Adam
time for sex offences. And he conflated that with racism in terms of the chance from the terrorists if this guy does come back into football. And, you know, since these comments, which, look, you look at them and if you take away any personal bias about what you think about the situation, there was nothing controversial about the comments. I can totally see the point he was trying to make. If you just refuse to look at it through the lens of how can I be offended by this, you know, he was trying to make a sensible point. But of course, his choice of words fell foul of the political correctness police. And Sky have now said that they will not be using him anymore. You know, they've distanced themselves from his remarks and they've said he won't be invited back as a pundit. Now, you know, if you're going to ask someone to sit there on live TV and ask them for their opinions on things, and then if they say something that you suddenly don't like, you're going to basically cut off their job and fire them. I mean, it's outrageous that this should happen. If Strachan feels like he owes people an apology, he should make one. If he doesn't, people should just get over it. And frankly, Sky should stand up for him and say, look, you know, this is live TV. A guy has been asked for his opinion on something in the moment. He has to come up with something there and then. And sometimes what these people say is perhaps going to offend people. But, you know, what's the alternative? Don't have any pundits on there and ask them their opinions because you don't want to offend anybody. I mean, you know, you talk about political correctness gone wrong, Rog. This is absolutely ridiculous to me. I mean, how can you possibly put a guy in that position?
No, that's interesting you've said that. I'm not sure that's my position. And your general point, I agree, because basically people on TV now are just into media-trained pap responses that are not interesting for anybody. I know exactly what Gordon Strachan, I think, was trying to say. He just said it very, very badly, and
yes,
I don't think it was the moment to even bring that into it, you know. So I think it's a bit. But here's the problem with Gordon. And remember, Gordon used to be the Scottish manager. And
I know you know well. That's why.
So Gordon's problem is that he's in that great Scottish term. He's a nippy sweetie. He likes to be very, very prickly, and he almost made it a kind of like caricature, and in many ways that's why he lost his job, because you know he had actually got Scotland on some kind of winning run in 2018 or 17 or something like that, and he made some comments, some silly comment that Scotland would never qualify again because we don't have tall enough players. He's got this kind of gaff in him regularly, Grant.
And you think Sky don't know that? You think Sky don't want him on there because they know he's going to cause a little bit of controversy and, you know, cause debate and get the fans up and engage them? Come on.
Well, as a pundit, he doesn't do it for me. You know, I just think he's always a little bit prickly. And, you know, you've got prickly like Strachan with this, he's got that kind of like smirk on his face, and you've got prickly like Graham Souness, which I love, which is completely different. I think Strachan, you know, this has been his downfall as he's got older. He's become quite a narky little guy.
Well, all right, let me ask you this. Is what he said out of character for him?
No.
So that's my point, right? You hire this guy, he's been a pundit on Sky Sports for, you know his character, you know what he's likely to do and say, and you know his likely reaction to things. How do you then punish him for one thing he said that happened to, you know, not come, and you know, I know in his apology after the event, he talked about his imprecise use of language, right? Yeah, that's what this is, right? To assume from what he said that he either condones or otherwise any course of, it's nonsense, right? It's when people say, "Well, you didn't. I've never heard you condemn Hitler, so you must be a Nazi." I mean, there are some things that you don't need to condemn in society. We all know that they're abhorrent, right? I just think if it was totally out of character and he went off the deep end, or he'd, you know, been boozing or whatever, fine. But to have someone on there who brings a certain persona and a certain dynamic to a debate show, which is what they wanted, you can't tell me they didn't hire him wanting that which he brings to the table in that format, because that's what it's all about. To then pick one thing he said that might have upset people and say, right, that's it, you know, we want nothing to do with you anymore. I think it's appalling.
Well, listen, you know, I'll reflect on that, because it's not where I would have started with my opinion on this, but, you know, you make good points. I just think he's been more than clumsy here. You know, there's two issues that you should be dealing with very, very kid gloves. One is racism, and one is what Adam Johnson did. And so he just brings them both together, which manages to upset absolutely everybody.
Roger, don't get me wrong, I get that, right? But that's Gordon's, you just said that's not out of character with him at all. So how can you punish a guy who's done nothing that you wouldn't have, you know, almost half expected him to do? Why put him on TV?
I see the point
you're
getting.
If you know there's a good chance that he's one day going to do this.
Well, no. Right? I don't think it's the case of they're thinking, well, you know, Gordon's always good for, you know, the odd really crazy quote, but this one went too far, so he has to go. I don't think they hire him on that basis. I think, you know, he's, in some ways, they see him as a decent pundit, and you know, I think most people were shocked. If you look at the Twitter reaction around that, you know, good people I like and respect, they were gobsmacked. And, you know, I wasn't, because I know what Strachan's like, but... But
that's my point. Were they gobsmacked because, oh my God, I didn't think I'd hear someone say that on TV?
I think it was that.
Right, but that's the problem, right? That's the problem. If he'd said that in a pub with a bunch of his mates, no one would have taken offense. They would have gone, oh, you know, you're out of line there. Or they wouldn't have said, I immediately want you to apologize for that, right? You'd have had the discussion you've gone, oh, well, you know what? I know you think like that, but you're just flat out wrong. Whatever it is, to be gobsmacked that you've heard it on TV, that's not the real world, right? You can't say, well, it'd be fine if we had the conversation in the pub, but you can't say that on TV. Why? Why? If you've got someone in the pundit. I mean, if you offend someone, that's fair enough. But, you know, it's this offense culture, as you know.
You're right. And I'm the same.
This is just another.
Well, this one, I've got to reflect on what you said, but I started more on their side, I have to say. I thought it was dreadful, but I'll reflect on what you're saying. It's part of a big problem that nobody wants to say what they feel anymore. You know, women, and it's just nobody benefits out of that. People just end up saying media trained nonsense, and it's just, that's not the world I want to live in.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely.
Listen, let's finish on football after that, because I wanted to talk about the Premiership. You know, I saw a tweet, somebody from the BBC, I think it was a sports journalist in the BBC, saying, oh God, you know, let's hope Liverpool don't win it, because, you know, we couldn't stand the Scousers, you know, getting...
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that.
I mean, really? I mean, what's your view on that? I
would love to see Liverpool win the title.
Me too.
But look, but you and me are... You know, we grew up in the 70s and 80s,
yeah,
right? When they were just such a fabulous team, and you know, the pinnacle of English football. I'd love to see them back up there again. But it's amazing. You know, I was talking to Colin about this. You know, even Colin, the Arsenal fan, would rather see City win than Liverpool for that exact reason. It's like, oh, I can't have all these Scousers just lording it over us. It would just be murder. So yeah, I'm well aware of that sentiment, and it baffles me as much as it baffles you.
Well, coming on to Colin and his Arsenal team, that there was another quote from the jockey McCoy. Did you see that one, Grant?
No, I
love that one. He says, basically, it's under the context, he thinks that Arsenal are soft. So he says, you know, like, if I was in the tunnel lining up against the Invincibles, I'd be shitting myself. If I'm lining up again the tunnel now against this current Arsenal team, I'm smoking a cigar, to basically say that they've not got what it takes. You know, they're soft.
And well, I think the results have proven that.
Certainly. Well, you know, well, here's the thing. You know, like, riddle me this, as you say, Grant. Does London have a problem? In the sense, you know, Tottenham have always got this. You know, they're soft. They're bottlers. Is having a club in London, where there's so much going on in life, and if you get beat, you can go and see the West End, and your wife's happy, and you can go shopping. Is London and playing football in London becoming now a competitive disadvantage?
That's a fascinating question. My gut says no. I don't see how it could be, but who knows? I mean, you know, it's an interesting thought, Rog.
I think there's something in that, mate. I think it attracts a certain type of player. I think it was always the way it used to be, you know, and you said the 70s and the 80s, even before then, you know, all the northern teams used to call it, you know, the soft southerners, and you know, I kind of think that there's something in that. I think these players are not as focused on their football down there as they are, you know, in cold Manchester or in you know, in sunny Liverpool. I think there's something in this, and Liverpool, I really hope they go on and do this, because I want them to get back to where they were. And you know, listen, at the end of the day, it's what foreign owner's going to win the league, you know? It's not as if there's any English people involved anymore.
And which of their foreign managers are going to help them do it, and which of their foreign players are going to score all the goals? I agree with you, but look, it's I've enjoyed watching Liverpool these last couple of years to see their renaissance. You know, it's not as though they don't play attractive football. It's not as though they haven't got a charismatic manager. It's not that they haven't got some great players. You know, they've got everything that you would hope for in a team that people would get behind. They've got the story, the history. They've got, you know, the tradition. It's all there, Rog.
Yeah, it is.
and it's needs the, to the be only them. Thing. But the only thing that people complain about is how the Scousers are going to lord it up over everybody else if they win. You know, it's a really strange situation, because if it was anybody else, we'd all be rooting for them, you know. It is bizarre. There isn't a feeling with Liverpool as though they're just going to buy this title, you know. That Man City, there's a feeling of that with Man City.
Yeah.
There's always a feeling of that with Chelsea. It feels like this would be a football club winning a championship and proper not club. A deep-pocketed owner who just wants, you know, trophies and playthings and what have you. So, look, I'm with you. I would love to see Liverpool win this. It's this next week, I think, is going to be the telltale. I mean, you know, Man City have got to play Spurs and United in a week, plus the Champions League game.
That's tasty.
Yeah, that's going to be, I suspect, the week that kind of sorts it out. After that, there's pretty much got straightforward games all the way.
Oh, really?
So we'll see.
Oh, wow. As they say, driving for show, putting for dough.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
That leads us on to where you're going this weekend. Can we mention that?
I'm taking my father to the Masters.
Good for you, mate. Good for you.
He's 80th, and it's something he's always wanted to do. So we're going to go up there for a day and watch some fantastic golf, and hopefully have some beautiful weather. And it'll be great to spend a bit more time with him and walk the hallowed fairways of Augusta National. So yes,
well, sounds fantastic.
Off
fantastic.
There and looking forward to it.
I wish you all the best for that, mate.
Thank you, mate. I will report back next time. But in the meantime, we need to wrap this up, Rog. As always, it's always fun, but we have run out of time. So
yeah, it's a good one.
All that remains to say is to thank everybody for listening and remind them to please rate and review the podcast and tell your friends, share the links, help us build the audience, and do follow us on Twitter. You'll find us at EntertainedR. That's Entertained A-R-E, the word, not the letter. And you can follow me on Twitter at TTMYGH.
And you can follow myself at RPM Como, as in the lake.
As in the lake.
I'd just like to say, Grant, we've just had some amazing feedback from the listeners on Twitter and also personally. And I just want to say I never take that for granted, and I'm always incredibly surprised at how generous people are. And if you are enjoying this, then thank you. Thank you for staying with us. We try and do our best, and keep it coming, because we've got some amazing guests coming up, and I think it will be an excellent spring and summer.
Amen to all that. All right, Rog, have a great week.
You too, mate.
I'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye.